This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Hey, welcome to Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Kevin.
I'm John.
And I'm Scott.
We have a great episode today. We have a lot of people here to discuss, and the thing we're going to be discussing right now is gender and diversity in surgery. And this all started with the I Look Like a Surgeon hashtag that has been exploding internationally on Twitter. I'm just going to introduce our discussants. First off, we have Dr. Amalia Cochran from the University of Utah. She's the Vice Chair of Education and Professionalism with the Department of Surgery and the President-elect for the Association of Women Surgeons. Dr. Cochran, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to be here with y'all today.
And now we also have Dr. Sharon Stein. She's a colorectal surgeon at University Case Western Medical Center. She's Associate Professor of Surgery, and she also is part of the Case Western Flex Program, a professional development program for women faculty of the School of Medicine. Welcome, Dr. Stein.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Patricia Turner, she's the Associate Professor at Northwestern University and a Clinical Associate Professor at the University of Chicago. She's the Director of the Division Member Services of the ACS. Dr. Turner, thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we're also excited to have Heather Logge of UCSF School of Medicine, and she's a general surgery resident at UNC, the original tweeter and champion of hashtag I Look Like a Surgeon. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you, and thanks so much for doing this podcast.
And finally, we have Dr. Nosanoff. She's a general surgery resident at the MedStar Washington Hospital Center. Lauren, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
Okay, so first we'll start with you, Dr. Logge. So just tell us about I Look Like a Surgeon. How did this come about? You know, what is, you know, you've probably told the story 1,000 times, but it seems to have really caught fire. So why do you think that is?
Well, the way it started was my best friend, Sarah, sent me a text message with a link to the article on the I Look Like a Surgeon, I Look Like an Engineer campaign, and said that she wished that there was one for surgeons. And I actually thought that there was. I had seen the article by Nikki Stamp with her I Look Like a Surgeon shirt. And as I looked into it, I realized there wasn't really a conversation that was happening on Twitter yet. So I sent that tweet out. And I got a response from Allison McCubery in Northern Ireland, actually, saying that she thought it was a great idea. I tweeted my own photo. I didn't really get much response. I got nervous. I'm only a resident. I wasn't sure I was really considered a surgeon, so I deleted it. And another woman posted her picture, Momtwa in Chicago. And it was this awesome picture with her scrub cap and her tongue out. And I decided I should write a blog encouraging this. And when I went to find her picture, it was actually deleted. And with Twitter, I direct messaged her and encouraged her to put it back. And in the meantime, Allison posted her picture. And then the floodgates were let down, and the I Look Like a Surgeon has really taken off.
And Kit, for those that aren't familiar with the, you know, the whole I Look Like an Engineer, can you just explain the whole, you know, the kind of the concept or the...
Sure. So it had started, Isis Anjali is an engineer in Silicon Valley, and her company had done a advertising campaign seeking employees, and she was one of the engineers featured in the campaign. And apparently there was a lot of conversations on Facebook of people debating whether or not she looked like an engineer or really was an engineer. And her friends would send her screenshots of these conversations, which was obviously quite upsetting to her. And she had faced a fair amount of obstacles at her job as an engineer. And with encouragement, she started the campaign, I Look Like an Engineer. which has also really taken off.
Do you have a favorite repost from someone around the world that you really liked?
I think it's been the pictures for me, and that it has been so international. But I think particularly for minority women in surgery, there's so few visible role models or opportunities to see them. And so seeing these pictures has really been empowering. And to see the moms, I think often we don't talk about our children at work. And so to see the pictures of everyone in all walks of life has been amazing. I'd just like to share what we're anticipating for the next steps for I Look Like a Surgeon. So importantly is continuing to give a platform and space for everyone to share their thoughts, experiences, and vision for the future of surgery and medicine. And we're doing that through Twitter, through Facebook, through personal blog posts, and I'm also happy to post guest blog posts on my blog as well. And then we're planning for ACS and having these powerful images streamed. And my dream is for these images to be streamed at every professional surgical conference in the next year.
So I guess just a question to open up to the panel is, you know, why is this movement so important? So, you know, what kind of challenges have you guys encountered, you know, throughout the process of, you know, from applying to medical school, applying to residency, you know, to becoming a staff surgeon, and in fellowship, you know, what are some of the stereotypes or some of the challenges that you have encountered along the way?
John, can I actually go back for a minute? Because I think just to recognize what Heather's done in terms of tweets on Twitter and how much this has affected people. So I just looked at the numbers as of right now on Simpler. There have been 37 million impressions, 14,000 tweets with 3,500 participants, which is just amazing. It's just amazing to see the diversity of people, and it's spread not only to women in surgery, but to all different types of people who don't look like the typical surgeon. To really show that a surgeon doesn't have to be the way we picture a surgeon in our old, you know, some movie that you saw, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, and this is what the surgeon comes in and does. Surgeons are really different today. And I think that's what's so exciting about the I Look Like a Surgeon movement. And I think it's just really amazing what Heather started.
And if I might jump in there, I think it also really highlights and celebrates the diversity of surgery. However rare it might seem to you as an individual in your particular hospital or in your particular location, there are other women or there are other people of color or there are others that are not, quote, the traditional surgeon. And this whole movement celebrates that diversity and allows people inside the ORs to know that they're not alone and allows those outside the OR, whether that's young people or trainees or the public, know that, in fact, we do exist and we are surgeons.
One of the things that I thought was so exciting about the movement is that it really focused on humanizing the face of surgeons and surgery, and a lot of people have been commenting about this. And I think that's one of the reasons in general that I so much enjoyed getting involved in Twitter, especially with the surgery community in the first place, was that it made it seem so much more that we were all just people, people who love surgery, people who love to operate, people who love medicine, but still people at the end of the day, which is why it's so much fun to see everyone with their families or out having fun or doing kind of silly things.
I'll add one more. This is Sharon Stein. I'll add one more thing to that, too. What's amazing, too, is we think about this in the United States and how hard it is for somebody who looks different from your average surgeon here or maybe has a disability. We've had people post, you know, who have physical disabilities, and it's just amazing. But if you go overseas where there are even fewer surgeons who look different or maybe have something that just, you know, they're a woman, they're a different minority. I was just in Japan where less than 8% of women are surgeons. And it's just really inspiring to see people all over the world posting their photos and saying, hey, this is what a surgeon looks like too.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into the question of why is diversity important in surgery?
This is Heather. I'd like to add that we keep talking about the stereotype of the surgeon and how we don't all fit that stereotype. And I think it's important to recognize that no one fits that stereotype anymore. And we really encourage the participation of the white men. I'm so glad that we had the voice of Chris Porter. He initially was hesitant to post a picture or get involved, being afraid that he would reinforce the stereotypes. But his blog post on his experience as a surgeon and a single father, I think, is one of the most inspiring posts that we've had so far. So this movement is definitely for those that don't visibly fit the stereotype, but it's really for all of us.
This is Amalia, and you know, the comment that I would have regarding this idea of why diversity and surgery is important is really a twofold concept. And part of it is the idea that we really need to have a workforce that is reflective of our patients that we're taking care of. There's enough research showing the impact of implicit bias on patient care, that's something that we have to be really thoughtful in our approach to. And if we have more surgeons who don't look like each other all the time, then we are achieving a goal of looking more and more like our patient population. The other piece of this is simply the change in the workforce and the change in American demographics and what that means for our profession. And again, people tend to have trouble visualizing becoming something if they don't have someone they can look at who they think looks like them or is them in some way. And with that being the case, the more that we are able to highlight people who may not fall into that traditional image of this is what a surgeon looks like, the better we are able to reach people who improve our workforce diversity and improve our care climate for our patients.
And this is Patricia. To take that even additionally a step further, because clearly the role modeling and the ability to see someone ahead of you who represents something that's similar to you is powerful for the young people. But from the standpoint of quality and excellence in surgery, there is no quality without diversity. So the fact is that we know from studies in business, from studies in medicine, from just what we know about life, that collective intelligence brings to bear all of the ways of thinking and all of the problem-solving abilities and all of the shared experience of those individuals who contribute to the collective intelligence, and that a narrow, homogenous slice does not yield the best results, does not yield the best collective knowledge. So without diversity in surgery, we cannot achieve excellence.
This is Lauren. I had a story that I really wanted to share that I thought kind of brought all of this together, which was that as a medical student attending the Clinical Congress for the first time, all by myself, sitting in the convocation, I remember looking around the room and going, oh my gosh, I didn't realize everyone is kind of an older, balding male surgeon. I had no idea how alone that would make me feel and how much that drove me then to seek out institutions like the committees on the Association of Women Surgeons and say, my gosh, I'm sure they're out there. I just have to find them.
And that's actually a great segue into the point that I was going to make, which is to say, you know, Clinical Congress is in Chicago this year. It's October 4th through 8th. And I think attending that and seeing that the power of all of those new initiates, and you know, 25% of our new initiates are not from the United States. You know, many increasing percentages of them are female. There are there is diversity represented in the incoming initiate classes, so the new fellows of the ACS. And I think that's a powerful opportunity to feel a part of that group, feel a part of that family, if, as it were. So, you know, perhaps we can all get together there and have a recap, or perhaps we can find a way to leverage that. But, you know, it's something to be said for 9,000 or 10,000 surgeons coming together to learn and to empower each other. And that's really the feeling that we're trying to get across from Clinical Congress to all of our members and fellows.
I'd like to add one more thing. This is Sharon. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing to do as someone who maybe isn't quite the stereotypical is to celebrate your diversity and celebrate what makes you unique. And I've seen, as a female colorectal surgeon, it kind of is a good niche for that, where a lot of women feel more comfortable coming to me with their problems than they do a male colleague, maybe even a more senior male colleague. And I think finding ways to make your diversity work for you and to make that a selling point for who you are and what you can do, and reaching out to different populations and making them more comfortable is an amazing gift to be able to do. So instead of kind of hiding the fact that you're different, celebrate it.
So I guess that kind of you know, you were talking about, you know, and maybe this is more addressed to the staff surgeons. How do you go about, or how do you see yourself as a, you know, a role model or an advisor to you know, younger women in surgery? How do you see your role there, and what kind of advice do you give to maybe a new resident coming into your program?
So this is Patricia. I was a program director for a number of years, and I know that others on the call are also. And certainly, we give probably similar advice to all interns. You know, fundamental things like go see the patient, you know, talk to the nurses, things like that that are really fundamental and across the board. But essentially, by virtue of existing, we are role models, whether we sought that out or not, because there may simply not be so many individuals that are at the full professor level or at the division chief's level or at the chair level, so that when interns come in, whether they're people of color or whether they're female or what have you, and quite frankly, whether they're, you know, male but from some other similar slice of the universe that you come from a rural environment and they see you, or from an urban environment or what have you, they will then wonder, how did you achieve that level of leadership, and then perhaps come to you feeling that you're approachable, ask you for advice, and then broker a relationship that may then foster their growth. So I think it's sort of an organic thing in many ways. Just by existing, we let people know that they can achieve those things as well.
I think for me too, it's kind of making sure that I'm true to myself and what my needs are. And I think about all these wonderful mentors that I was lucky enough to have, some of whom were women, some of whom were men, when I was coming through the ranks as a resident and even early on in my attendinghood. And I think when I made changes, I have now a 4-year-old daughter, and my husband is also a surgeon, and we have a really busy life. And so I decided to make some change in how I structure my time to be able to do things a little bit differently than the average stereotypical surgeon, so that I could make sure that one of us is home sometimes. And I'm still really busy. I'm still really productive. But to some extent, I think by modeling what I think is right for me, I think in some ways I open the doors for those who will come behind me. And I agree with everything Pat said in terms of, you know, modeling, and there's so many organic relationships. I mentor tons of medical students. I think every medical student who's a woman who's thinking about surgery comes through my door, and talk to them about why is it they want to do surgery? Is this what they love? Is this what they're passionate about? And just like I would a man, though, because I think surgery is something that takes a huge amount of commitment. And I think that if you're really passionate about it, it's what you truly want to do, then you have to do it. And you'll figure out a way to make it work.
And is that something you're still seeing a lot of when you have maybe med students rotating through? Is it, do you see a lot of the female med students coming in and asking specifically, you know, how did you do this? How do I do this as a woman? Is that still a very big concern that you're seeing a lot of?
This is Sharon. It is for me. I see a ton of women going through being really concerned about how am I going to balance a life and be a surgeon. And I want to have kids. I want to be married. I want to do those things. And how is it that that's going to work for me?
And this is Patricia. I still get that question quite a bit. But what I'll say is that more recently, it's really more of a generational thing that crosses genders. Like, I now have young men who maybe not quite in the same way with specific questions about pregnancy and timing and that sort of thing, but who ask questions about balance and family. And so really I've found that over the last, I don't know, decade perhaps, there's been a shift where this truly does not split on gender lines as much as it does on perhaps generational lines or age lines.
It was definitely a concern that I brought up to numerous mentors. I can confirm that. Now, recently there was
Can I add something?
Oh, yeah, please.
Of course.
This is Lauren. I think this was a huge issue for me, and I think Heather can probably echo this as well, as I always knew I wanted to do surgery. I didn't have any question about that, and I always knew I wanted a family. And although I had many wonderful female mentors, it was actually some of my male mentors in medical school who were the ones who were modeling how to go ahead and
have a family and balance that there with their career. They were very dedicated and involved with their families, and ultimately was a huge motivation for my decision actually to have children in medical school so that I didn't end up having to make that choice between the two things that I felt really passionate about.
Well, yeah, and there was recently an article just published in the American Journal of Surgery that was out of the UK, I believe, and they were publishing sort of the perceptions of women in surgery in the UK, and they actually published some surveys that reflected the US, and actually the Royal College of Surgeons currently has 11% of the surgeons who are women, and they also published that the US is closer to 20%, but 38% are residents of residents in surgery in the US are women as of last year. This article, they also just asked some of the, you know, the respondents of how they felt about a career in surgery. Was it welcoming to women? What did you guys take away from this study?
This is Amalia. I was very interested to see this study because I've actually been spending a large portion of my time the last 2 years doing some qualitative work on barriers to academic careers in surgery. And this really helped reinforce my own biases, if nothing else, recognizing that it was coming out of a different country. And certainly talking to our colleagues from the UK, talking to a young resident who I know well, who is from the UK and got a PhD over there but is in the States doing her surgical training, they are remarkably behind where we are in terms of the status of women in surgery. And they're still fighting a lot of the battles that we were all fighting 15 years ago. And so while it's helpful information for us to have, I think for those of us practicing in the U.S. And involved in the education process in the U.S., it's one of those things that sort of helps us see that we have come a long way. We still have miles to go, but we are making progress.
So this is Heather. In terms of Lauren's comment about male mentors in surgery, I'd like to add that when I was at San Francisco General, it was my mentor, Andre Campbell, who talked about making sure that he got home every night to give his son a bath. And it was, you know, the legend William Schechter who frequently talked about his family. And those gave me messages that it would be okay to combine surgery with family. I'd also like to add that I'm excited about the power of social media. And in terms of mentoring, mentors can reach a far wider audience than they ever could before. By writing a blog post, they'll never know how many lives they affected. And even by having the conversation on Twitter, it may seem like they're conversing with one person and mentoring, but there are thousands of people reading those tweets and getting the message.
Dr. Cochran, to your point about that, you know, we've progressed with women in surgery, and I guess this would go to everyone. What areas are we lacking in diversity in surgery in the U.S., and can we take any of the lessons that we've used to help promote women in surgery and apply it to these disenfranchised groups?
We are still terribly behind in terms of ethnic minorities, and this is something that's not just a surgery issue, it's a broader medical education issue. If you look at the number of African-American men who are enrolled in medical school, that percentage and number has declined over the last decade. And we need to figure out why that's the case. You know, Hispanics are wildly underrepresented in healthcare in general, particularly in medical school, once you get out of certain geographic areas in the U.S. And so we've made some really terrific progress for women by being very conscious about things, by moving to having, you know, recruitment committees and training and implicit bias when we're trying to hire people for faculty positions. But a lot of this really amounts to getting the message out there that this campaign of I Look Like a Surgeon has been so important for showing that, you know, those diverse populations who are still underrepresented minorities in medicine have a place at the table, and specifically for us, of course, have a place at the operating room table.
And Dr. Cochran, I was hoping you could talk to us a little bit about the Association for Women Surgeons. As you're the president-elect, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what the goals of those organizations are, as well as how, you know, faculty, residents, and med students can get involved.
Absolutely. The Association of Women Surgeons was founded in 1981, and Pat Newman, who is also a former president of the American College of Surgeons, at the Clinical Congress that year had put up a sign trying to get women surgeons together for breakfast, and ended up with this organization that has been wildly successful over the intervening almost 35 years now. We have more than 1,400 members, and our core mission is to inspire, encourage, and enable women surgeons to realize their professional and their personal goals. And while we feel that AWS has been really important in addressing the unique challenges that women surgeons face, we also have come to realize over time that these aren't just women surgeons' issues, but these are surgeons' issues. And so while we are still an organization focused on the women surgeons' issues, we know that by doing that, that we are benefiting the surgical profession as a whole, which is something that is very important to all of us who are in the leadership of the organization. Our commitment to professional growth and development, while it's focused on our female colleagues, is really across the board making that happen for everyone so that surgery is a better place. In terms of involvement, I tell people that they can start getting involved as a medical student. Heather and Lauren are spectacular examples of that. They got involved with our social media committee when it was just more of a task force and before we started our communications committee that's now in place. And they have contributed tremendously to the organization, particularly to our digital growth. And the fact that as medical students, they were able to have a voice and have a place at the table is something that I think has been a synergistic win. It's helped them have better access to women who I hope have served as good mentors for them, and it's helped us as an organization with our development. But I think that a story like that or a story like my own, where I joined an AWS committee when I was a fellow and have risen through the ranks, with a little bit of hard work and commitment and some crazy ideas, that it really speaks to the fact that we're a very democratic organization and that if people show up and get involved and have a passion for bettering our profession and finding ways to do that, that we want them to be part of who we are.
So you're telling me that Lauren, Heather, and Dr. Cochran have been friends before this episode? We did not purposely put these people together in this setting.
Yeah. To be honest, I have ties with everyone who's on the call because Sharon is also on the AWS Council. She is our chair of our communications committee right now.
Wow.
Small world.
It's all about converging circles.
All across the U.S. and, you know, this closely knit still. That really does speak to social media's power.
Well, so this is Patricia. I was going to say that, you know, one of the benefits of an organization like AWS, which I've been a member of for quite a long time, is that it does broker these relationships that we all benefit from having through our professional organizations. And, you know, obviously the American College of Surgeons is the umbrella organization that encompasses all the surgical specialties and all people. But then there are the subspecialty groups that either align along a particular area of clinical interest or along some other area of interest. And so that creates that camaraderie and that relationship, which allows us then to have a warm relationship with individuals. And really, that's the kind of thing that when you talk about leadership development, when you talk about who's chosen to be a panelist, who's chosen to be a commentator, who's chosen to write a formal review of something. I mean, those personal relationships mean quite a lot. And so by sitting at the table in professional surgical organizations, whether it's the college or the AWS or what have you, those are the sorts of things that help bring along the women and the people of color and the other people who have not yet achieved the leadership roles and it's higher percentage because now they have these relationships. And that really is a lot of, you know, what we're talking about. High quality, of course, excellence, of course. But then having someone who picks you to do something in a public forum is really very powerful.
And are there any programs specifically within the ACS that promote gender and diversity in surgery that you'd like to talk about?
Well, there are. I mean, we have a committee that focuses on issues related to women, the Women in Surgery Committee. And again, those on the call, I know from circles there as well as other circles. There's also a committee on diversity issues within the college, and both of those groups are very active, putting forth programming for Clinical Congress to make sure that there are courses or academic offerings that are of interest for those who attend Clinical Congress, as well as providing, again, leadership growth opportunities, whether it's at Clinical Congress or in some other forum. And many of our younger people are coming in. They are medical student members. They are resident members. They are young fellows. And so there's a very aggressive resident and associate society and a young fellows association. And so all of that is meant to help broker these relationships and access to these leadership opportunities that everyone really wants to do. If you have time and you're passionate about surgery and you're looking for a way to be involved, we want to facilitate that because that's how you become a leader down the line.
This is Sharon. I'm going to add on that too. I think some of my best mentors have been people who I sat on the committee with or got involved in an organization with. They saw that I was interested, enthusiastic, passionate about what we were doing, that you get asked to do some things that at first may even seem menial, and you do a good job with that. And before you know it, they're going to you for different opportunities to kind of echo what Patricia just said. And before you know it, it's someone you can call up when you have a question. You don't know which way to turn in your professional, personal life. And those are people who have become some of my best mentors. It's a fabulous mentorship opportunity, finding ways that you're connected with other people and you can bond to them. Those are kind of those just organic mentorship relationships that are going to last a lifetime.
And Dr. Stein, on those lines, can you tell us a little bit about the Case Western's Flex program and how it does some of those things?
Yeah, the Case Western Flex program was actually started by a pulmonologist at Case by the name of Sunita Khatri, who looked at Case like a lot of other universities that didn't retain and keep and promote women as leaders within the faculty of the School of Medicine. Interestingly, we do have a female dean of medicine, but this was for women in the School of Medicine. And the idea is basically it's an executive presence program. And it's just trying to figure out what are the qualities within you by doing 360-degree evaluations and looking at different personality styles and how do you work with someone who's a difficult boss? How do you work with a difficult person who you reports to you? How do you make that interaction from something that might have been negative into something positive? And these are things that help women, help men. Everyone can use an executive presence workshop. The program lasts over a year, and so in addition to having these specific workshops, you also form very strong bonds with the other women in the program. And so you, again, create a community. You have this community of people who've kind of seen your warts and your bad sides and kind of know where your weak spots are. And you can go to when you're having a problem in the future and say, hey, you know, I can't quite figure this out by myself. And they can say, well, you know, remember this that we learned in that, and you can try this and that. And it's just wonderful. It's an amazing community. They're actually now in their fourth year and been amazingly successful and are hoping to expand it to all around the country.
Oh, that's a great program, Dr. Stein. Thank you. I just wanted to do a quick impromptu poll of the group. Who here is planning on being at the Clinical Congress in Chicago?
This is Heather.
I'll be there. This is Patricia.
So Heather and Dr.
I'll be there.
This is Lauren. I just registered today.
So 100% participation, huh? That's,
correct.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
I want to add a little plug, too, for Association of Women Surgeons, that on October 3rd, which is the Saturday right before the Congress, there will actually be an executive presence program as part of the Association of Women Surgeons program. It's only a few hours, but it'll give you kind of a taste of what an executive presence program might be able to do for you.
I have one question. You guys are probably more plugged into the clinical congress than I am. This is Kevin. And, you know, I submitted an abstract, got rejected, but I still want to go. But, you know, I'm paying on my own dime now. What days am I going to get the most bang for my buck if I can, you know, I can probably afford to swing 3 days up there into Chicago? What days would you guys recommend me going?
So I can take a crack at that. So there are a couple of things I suggest. One, download the app. The app is available for download, and it has not only all of the programming, but also you can track by tracks. So you can look at what's of interest from a clinical standpoint. You can look at all the resident activities, all the young fellow activities, all of the activities based on a clinical area of interest, and that can actually help you decide which are the days that are most interesting. You know, a lot of people love the Sunday, Monday for the pomp and circumstance. I mean, that's when we welcome our new initiates, and there's lots of an opportunity to see really what makes the whole event so exciting. And then the Monday is the opening ceremony, you know, thousands of surgeons there. And then literally all day, multiple tracks, you know, the whole time. So the app might be the best way to take a crack at which would be the highest yield for you.
And did anybody on the call happen to review Kevin's rejected abstract?
What I would encourage you to do is to continue to resubmit, because there are, you know, that's a frustrating thing to have your abstract rejected, but know that there are incredibly high numbers of people submitting their work, and we want you to continue to submit your work, because presenting at Surgical Forum or presenting at the college is a great way to make these relationships that we've talked about and find those mentors. You know, there may be someone who asks a question of you after your oral presentation, and then the next thing you know, you're collaborators on a research project, and then the next thing you know, they're, you know, offering you a job, or, you know, you're being recruited, and then that's really how these mentorship relationships can be born.
No, I wouldn't worry too much. Kevin's quite used to rejection at this point.
This is Heather. I would just like to share a story that highlights two points. One being the courage to take risks, and the other, the courage to being mentored throughout our careers. So when I actually started the Twitter account for the Association of Women Surgeons, and when I did that, I let the committee know. I'd have to admit, I maybe didn't explain fully what that meant. And the next thing we knew, we had followers from all over the world, which was thrilling. And Dr. Cochran was very brave in backing us and being very supportive. And in terms of mentoring, there's a Dr. Brian Stork, a urologist, who I met on Twitter back in 2012. And he wasn't sure what he thought about Twitter. And through Twitter, he asked if we could talk over the phone. So in 2012, we spoke for an hour on what I thought was possible with Twitter. He continued. He now has a very successful blog and has reached a lot of people. And we just ran into each other again. And he wrote an excellent blog on women in surgery. But he continues to be mentored. In fact, I just explained to him what pinned tweets are and how to do that. So I think particularly in surgery, we're not used to flipping the hierarchy or mentoring in the opposite direction at all. But it's those who are willing to take that mentorship from those younger than them who are succeeding in the social media space.
Yeah, we understand that. We had to explain to Dr. Steele what a podcast was when we first started this thing. So yeah, it works.
And it's those voices that are among the most important to have on Twitter. So I think it's unfortunate that the technology is a little bit of a barrier, but the more mentors that we get on, the better. Dr. Julie Freischlag at Davis just joined because of the campaign.
So I have a question just for the group. You know, you guys have, you know, you've been through it. You've been there. You know, from those initial concerns from back when you were a med student, you were thinking about a career in surgery, and, you know, those initial concerns about the stereotypes for women in surgery and the challenges that are ahead of you as a woman pursuing a career in surgery. Have you found the career, the world of surgery, to be more welcoming than you anticipated, less welcoming than you anticipated? Were those concerns legitimate? And for the areas that we're still lacking, where is it coming from? Is it coming from patients? Is it coming from colleagues? From, you know, more senior surgeons? Where are we still, you know, missing the mark?
This is Amalia.
I will be completely transparent and confess that where I went to medical school at that time, there were no women on faculty, and there was only one woman resident. But I was really fortunate to have enlightened men who mentored me through my application process and helped me get into a wonderful residency program. And one of the things for me was not so much the concern about gender as that monolithic stereotype that still is out there about surgeons are mean people and difficult personalities and all of those things. That was my biggest barrier that I had to get past in order to want to pursue this as a career. And so it was less about being a woman, and it was more about not wanting to be a jerk, which sounds really funny in hindsight. And I when I decided to go into surgery, I said, you know, I will do this, but I'm only doing it if I don't sell my soul in the process. And I would like to believe that I have held on to the core of who I am, and I would like to believe that I am a nice person most days, recognizing that we all have our days that we're not at our, you know, we're not totally on our A game. But for me, overcoming that generalized cultural stereotype of who surgeons are was the bigger hurdle.
This is Lauren. I would definitely want to echo that, and I found it surprising. I came from a medical school that was had a lot of female faculty. I'm in a program that has a lot of female faculty. And really just recently I had a medical student on my service under me who, when she looked at me, her reaction wasn't that I didn't look like a surgeon in terms of being female. She had no problem accepting the fact that plenty of women are surgeons. The reaction is exactly the same thing as, but you don't seem like a surgeon because you're too nice. And I think that made me really sad, because if she's having that perception, that means that stereotype is still out there, and that it means there are still people who either are perpetuating that stereotype or whose behavior still engenders that stereotype. And I think that what Amalia was getting at is exactly the point, is just like any other kind of role modeling, not just modeling gender or diversity, but role modeling surgeons who care about their patients and role modeling surgeons who are kind to their colleagues is just as important, I think, to motivate those who would be on the fence about going into surgery to say, this is a community that I want to be a part of for the rest of my life.
This is Heather. I would like to echo that as well. I actually have a blog post coming out titled When Nice is a Surgical Skill, because similar to what's been said, I feel like traditionally it hasn't been considered part of surgery. Actually, Dr. Kathy Hughes wrote a blog post on it as well about specifically this surgical stereotype. And it's been phenomenal to have these blog posts. I linked to one of Amalia's as well that talk about surgeons as nice. It's not something that we've always seen.
Well, and this is Patricia. I think, honestly, the last several comments have summed up the passion behind I look like a surgeon, which is to say there is not a narrow definition of what a surgeon looks like, what a surgeon acts like. There are nice surgeons and there are not nice surgeons. There are female surgeons, there are male surgeons, there are, you know, tall surgeons and short surgeons. You know, I mean, we really are not all cut from the same cloth. And that's why this is so powerful, because individuals are now able to identify someone, maybe superficially, maybe just through Twitter, or maybe that opens the door to further conversations, or maybe by having more of us in the field, those who are coming behind us can see that maybe our mentors, and each of us has mentors that have been incredibly valuable and powerful in our careers, can take some of that and try to pay it forward. I mean, that's really what this is all about.
Echoing what Patricia just said, one of my running jokes is surgeons are people too.
Definitely.
Believe it or not, we are.
As we're starting to close this great episode out here, I would like to just get feedback from all of you on advice to aspiring women surgeons, future surgeons of all genders and ethnicities, and maybe a piece of advice on the first day of internship, which is a classic question we ask on our podcast weekly.
This is Heather. I would like to echo a tweet actually by my friend Sarah Scarlett. She said that the best advice she ever received was to stop asking herself, do I look like a surgeon, and start proving it.
Following up on that, this is Patricia. Clearly, exemplary surgical skills, clearly knowledge, clearly excellence, clearly quality, all of that is necessary in order to be a great surgeon. No question about it. All we're saying is that in addition to all of that, there is value in making sure that everyone who brings forward that skill set has an opportunity to enjoy what we all enjoy, which is caring for patients. Being a surgeon, it's one of the highest callings. I think all of us would say we wouldn't envision doing much else. And making sure that the door is open for others to enjoy what we enjoy every day. And as far as intern advice, my advice is always go see the patient. You can't diagnose anything over the phone, via text, via page. Always go see the patient.
A few months ago on Twitter, I started a Dear Intern hashtag back in April, actually, and got some really fantastic results or comments back from people on it. And the piece that I threw out there that is really my most core piece of advice that I give is just for success, show up and do your best every single day, no excuses.
This is Sharon. I'm going to echo a little bit of what Amalia just said. I think for intern advice, never have regrets because you didn't do something. You know, it's so hard. Surgery is stressful. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of energy. And sometimes you kind of think, Patricia said, go look at the patient. But always putting in that extra bit of effort, sitting down at the end of the day and talking to one of your patients by sitting on their bed and holding their hand and being there, those are the moments that make such a difference, not only to the patient, but to you as well. They make you feel like a human again. And there's some days where you're just running around crazy and it gets to be too much. And just kind of remembering that you're there to take care of people and always do the right thing for them.
This is Lauren. I would say, kind of building what off everyone said, that I think is applicable both for becoming a surgeon, but also just being an intern, is whatever you're going to do, you have to own it, which you're trying to face how to take care of your patient, to accept the fact that you're not the medical student anymore, you're the doctor, and you have to go be the doctor. And the way to do it is to own it and sit, and just like Heather was saying, look in the mirror and say, I'm going to have to create myself and make myself into that person who can do this, who can handle this situation. And then, again, to look around you and realize everyone else is just as scared, but, just as committed to making it happen.
Well, that does it for us today on Behind the Knife. Special thanks to Drs. Cochran, Stein, Turner, Nazanoff, and Loghi for discussing with us gender and diversity in the world of surgery. Be sure to check our show notes on iTunes. We'll put links to their blogs and Twitter feeds up on there. And be sure to join us next time for another episode of Behind the Knife.
Just a reminder, we can be found at Twitter at Behind the Knife, on Facebook at Behind the Knife, and on our website at www.behindtheknife.org. We really want this to be an interactive experience, so give us your random fact of the day, your tips and tricks, or topics you want to hear. And we're also going to tweet out who we're interviewing that day, and you guys can send in your questions, and we'll read them live on the show. This podcast can be found on iTunes and any other podcast provider.
All right, looks like count's correct. Fash is closed, and the dressings are on.
Until next time, thank you for joining us on Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Dominate the day.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a 1-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.